Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, we're back. Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And as promised, his name is Chris Mannix. He's a senior writer over at Sports Illustrated, covers the NBA and a whole bunch of other stuff. He joins us now. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
Everything is good here in Memphis. How would you describe the state of the Memphis Grizzlies currently?
Probably not as good as the last time I think I talked to you guys. I mean, a month or so ago, they were one of the better stories in the entire NBA. I mean, you had Conley coming back, playing at a high level, Marc Gasol being healthy, Jaren Jackson, the first draft pick they hit on in God knows how long. But they've kind of reverted to the mean, and in a way, their weaknesses have really been exposed, I think, over this past month. The defense hasn't been awful, but it hasn't been as good. And offensively, if they don't get major contributions from Gasol, Conley, and Jackson, they just oftentimes don't have enough firepower to win. So, it's a long season, obviously, and stuff like this tends to even itself out. So I'm not all that surprised Memphis slipped. It's just happened pretty precipitously over the last month.
Chris, you've been saying blow it up for a while. I'm going to give you credit on that. And I had jumped on board with you a while back, a long time before maybe other Memphians have come on board. We all agree it's time to do it now. But how do you, I guess the question is now, how do you start that process when to really start over, don't you need to move that draft pick on to Boston, right, so finish outside the top eight? And if you trade Gasol now, right, push the blow-up button, you're definitely looking at a top eight finish, right? So how would you do it, I guess, is the way I would pose the question to you.
Yeah, it gets a lot trickier this year than maybe it would have been last year, especially when it comes to a Marc Gasol. I mean, Marc Gasol's value would have been much higher last year because he had the extra year in his contract. Now, he's probably going to pick up that option for next year. It makes no sense to me anyway why he wouldn't. But to have Marc Gasol under a manageable deal for 2 years instead of one, I think would have been much more interesting to other teams and would have brought back something more significant in return. It's tricky, I'll say that. And, it's sometimes it's tough for me as someone that has lived my entire life in big markets. I mean, I grew up in Boston. I spent most of my adult life in New York.
Sure.
I believe that you're either competing for a championship or you should be doing stuff to put yourself in position to compete for a championship. Sometimes in smaller markets, and I've heard this argument from NBA types, being a team like Memphis, making the playoffs, occasionally making a run to the Western Conference Finals is enough. I don't really buy that. I think that it should be a championship or bust mentality. And I saw firsthand, the architect of, maybe the best rebuilding job in league history, Danny Ainge, in being proactive with your stars. KG could still play at the very end. Paul Pierce, these guys had value, and Danny Ainge maximized that value. If you've got two guys like Mike Conley and Marc Gasol, both of whom are icons in Memphis, we'll have their jerseys in the Raptors, and the Raptors at some point in Memphis. But, if you really want to, rip this thing apart and build around Jaren Jackson, the time to get something for them is right now.
Yep.
You wrote, I want to go back to Mark for a minute, because you wrote in November 2017 when they fired David Fizdale that was the time simultaneously that they should have parted with Marc Gasol. Obviously, they did not. And here we are, a year and change later. His value, as you mentioned, is not as good as it would have been just as a result of time and age and things like that. If they didn't trade him then, does it make any sense for them to trade him now?
Well, it depends on what the ownership and front office deems a successful season. Now, I still think this team, because of its defense and because Conley and Gasol are right up there with one of the top duos in the NBA, they're capable of making a run at a playoff spot. What's the value in that? I mean, that's a question only, the front office team and the coaching staff and certainly Robert Parra at the top have to answer. But, I mean, we can't sit here and say that, Memphis is 3-5 years away from winning a championship. They're just not on that path right now. So I think the question that Chris Wallace has to answer and and people that work with him have to answer is what do they value? I mean, if you know, they're really, like I said, you're not going to get a lot from Marcus Gasol if you make a trade right now, but you'd still get something, and it would put you down that rebuilding path that maybe you're eventually going to go down anyway. Or do you want to hold on to these guys and kind of let them, you know, decompose in a basketball way in a Memphis uniform? I just don't know what's the most valuable asset or valuable commodity in Memphis right now.
I know we're kind of hypothesizing and speculating here, Chris, but do you think a 2019 first rounder could be something that the Grizzlies get back for Mark?
It's possible. It's more possible because of the likelihood that Mark picks up that option. And, you know, look, as crazy as it sounds, like $25 million is not extreme money, or whatever it is Mark's going to make next year,
right,
is not extreme money in the NBA. I mean, you know, we're living in a bonkers world, but that's a manageable contract in by today's NBA cap standards. So I think that you probably could, but if you look at the history of guys' trades, remember, you know, Kawhi Leonard didn't fetch more than a protected first-round pick and a DeMar DeRozan, who really nobody in the league wanted, you know, out of Toronto. I mean, he's a good player but with a tough contract. And Dennis Smith Jr. is being shopped right now. I don't think he's going to fetch anything close to the lottery pick that the Mavericks used on him. Teams are even more protective than usual of first-round picks. Now, you might find that one team that is desperate enough, maybe it's a small-market team, another small-market team that knows it's not really going to be a player in free agency next year. But unless you find that high-level team, I don't know if that high first-round pick is going to be on the table.
Chris, I'm curious, do you agree that conveying the pick for the Grizzlies, best thing to do, the top eight protected pick to Boston, best thing to do right now if you're going to do this full rebuild? Or would you say, and we think, you know, the top four or five teams are too far ahead of you, or would you say with the all-or-nothing approach, hey, just tank, take your chances in a draft, may not be that deep, but hey, maybe you hit big, which way would you go?
You know, I think Brooklyn has proved that yep. just getting it out of the way is the best way to go. Like, just yep. do it. I mean, convey the pick and then move forward. I mean, the Nets have done, I mean, an unreal job of rebuilding with no draft picks. I mean, they've got, you know, Boston takes their pick every single year and turns it into Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Sure has.
They've got a playoff team right now.
They do.
With, like, you know, D'Angelo Russell and you know, some bad contracts on the roster. So I think just kind of, you know, that rip the Band-Aid off mentality and convey it and get rid of it and start to move forward is the right approach. But that's not an easy question to answer because there's so many layers to it. And, you know, the protections on that pick moving forward. I mean, it's a difficult decision.
How much did Boston need that win last night over Toronto? Or maybe just the way they did it for their psyche with what Kyrie had been saying, the way they won, you were there, what'd you think?
I mean, the Celtics right now are coming dangerously close to being an episode of the Kardashians. I mean, they're just. I mean, everything is something new. I mean, they beat the Raptors in what was probably their biggest win of the season. Mm-hmm. I mean, they lose to three sub 500 teams, and you know, within 30 minutes, nobody cares because everybody's focused on Kyrie calling LeBron James
right. And
how that phone conversation went. I haven't turned the TV on this morning, but I can't fathom that every single of those debate shows is not talking about that.
They are not a
Celtic win.
Yeah.
So, you know, they needed it, and we'll see if it's a springboard. They've got the Grizzlies on Friday, and they've got a back-to-back against Atlanta. Those are two games that they have to feel confident they win. They're a different team when they play at home. I mean, especially offensively, they move the ball so well at home versus on the road. So maybe it can be, but, you know, I've seen this team go on 8-game winning streaks and then have 6-game losing streaks.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them, you know, look great against top-tier teams and then stink up the joint against Orlando. So they're as Jekyll and Hyde as you can get right now, and that's largely because, you know, they just, at this point, they still don't know exactly how to play as a unit.
There is obviously always going to be a reaction to the reaction about the call, and I'm sure you've seen a little bit of it too, that there are now some people out there saying, well, when Kyrie Irving calls LeBron and says what he says, it's basically him acknowledging, you know what, now I'm playing with idiots and I know what that feels like.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
It's fair, and I kind of took note of that as soon as he said it last night. I'm like, you're basically calling your teammates the same type of dink that you were back in the day. And I'm not sure that's entirely fair because, you know, your teammates without you went to a conference finals. Like, they
exactly.
were good. Like, they, you know, they were, you know, a quarter away or a couple of big shots away from knocking off LeBron James in that conference final. So it's not the same situation. But, you know, having watched Kyrie all season long, he is really grappling with this role as team leader. As he said last night and said a couple times before, this is what he wanted. He wanted this this leadership mantle. He wanted his own team. He's just not sure how to approach it. When do you use the carrot? When do you use the stick? When are you pumping your teammates up? When are you ripping them apart? When do you take this all public, as he did after the Orlando game? He's really struggling with it. And I'll give him some credit, because LeBron really is the master at elevating teammates. I mean, the Lakers stink. Like, they're awful. And with LeBron, they look like a middle-of-the-pack playoff team in the Western Conference. Same thing with the Cavaliers. I mean, Kevin Love hasn't played, but that's a lot of the same pieces from the last few years, and they stink. I mean, I think he's wise to try to pick the brain of LeBron James. I just think he maybe could have used some better language in that post-game gaggle. Yeah.
Chris, James Harden has scored 115 points over the last two games, and what's crazy is that none of them have been points that were assisted on. He's doing this on his own. Do you enjoy watching it? I'm just curious. The basketball man in you, forget covering it. When you're watching it, do you enjoy watching the way he gets it?
I think I enjoy watching it now, because it's almost like watching a car crash, and you're like, you're just morbidly fascinated by what is in front of you. Like, every team at this point, no Chris Paul, Clint Capella out. These are smart NBA teams with high-level defenders.
Uh-huh.
They're loading up on James Harden, and he's just saying, you can't beat me.
We just saw it. Yep.
There's nothing that you can do to stop me on any given night, and that's really remarkable to watch. Somebody asked me last night, what's my definition of a great player? Asked me if Harden is a great player. Great player to me is someone that can, press the FU button on this remote control and say, I can beat you by myself. And few players could do that. LeBron can do that. I think Kawhi Leonard's one of those players, frankly, as well. And there's James Harden, who, without Chris Paul, without Capella, you could basically put third stringers out there, and James Harden can beat most teams in the NBA because of his talent. So it's a little bit, kind of eye-gouging to watch because of how he milks the shot clock. But right now, knowing that everybody on that defensive side of the ball is looking right at him and game-planning for him, NBA players, and he's just going off, it's really, really interesting.
That part of it is fascinating. Yep. It really is.
We are, of course, talking to Chris Mannix, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Chris, Boogie Cousins is coming back tomorrow for Golden State. That certainly is the word. If healthy, if he comes back, he's healthy, doesn't suffer any setbacks, and he fits in like we think he might be able to fit in, does he make Golden State unbeatable in a 7-game series?
Well, I think we need to temper expectations for what he's going to look like. That's a tough injury.
Mm-hmm.
And you look through the history of guys that have dealt with Achilles tears, it's a long way back. And, he's fortunate that he's coming back to a situation where all they really need is, 20 minutes of defense, rebounding, and occasional post-ups. He's not going to have to be what he once was. But it's going to be, I think, a rocky road. He'll have some moments early on where he'll hit a fadeaway or a three-pointer, and we'll sit up and say, Boogie's back. But he's also going to have some games where he put up bagels, and, he's off the floor in the fourth quarter because that Achilles doesn't make him as mobile or makes him less mobile than what he once was. But I think the hope in Golden State is that, the rest of the regular season is basically an extended preseason for Boogie Cousins. So when we get to April and that first round of the playoffs, he's 75-80% of what he once was.
Chris, lastly, I got it's definitely one of your best tweets ever. You were answering a question about your age, and the answer was up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, start. And I can do it with my hands, Chris, and my producer and I were trying to remember. Is that Contra? Is it to get all the weapons? Like, what game was that? I'm trying to remember.
Come on, fellas. It's Contra getting
it
the
was
30
Contra.
Lives.
Yes.
30 lives.
Yes.
Contra. Yeah, I mean, I played that game. I mean, let me put it this way. If there was like an esports league for Contra, I would have been the biggest Contra winner ever.
I'd have been in there with you.
I played Contra. Yeah, and it's funny listening to the replies. Like, everybody got it.
Oh,
like,
everybody got it.
It was awesome. Anybody over the age of 30 was like, okay, yep, I know that one.
Chris, we always
keep
appreciate
up
the time,
work,
man. Thank you.
Thank you for this.
Anytime, guys.
Yep, he is Chris Mannix, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Yeah.
That's before your time, little man.
Yeah, I don't.
And
have,
I that wasn't meant in an offensive way. It was meant in a young way.
It was offensive. That was definitely.
I don't mean
offensive.
To offend, brother.
Bennett, did you see how he said that?
It was. It was very
little
poignant.
Man is in young man. I call my son little man.
Yeah, no,
you didn't play Contra.
Yeah, I'm not your son.
I'm sorry, big man.
I'm that perfect age where I was able to transfer. Like, I was there for regular Nintendo at its peak, and then the beginning of Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
And so it was just. it worked out great because I had the best of both worlds.
Well, that's true. Hold on. Let me get back over here to Final Fantasy over here now. Was that your game?
Yeah,
big man. Okay. Yeah. All right. Sorry,
Sega
big man.
Dreamcast over
here. Yeah, that's what I thought. A little Final Fantasy for you.
Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. A little Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah. I really didn't mean anything by it, man. Just an age reference.
I'm sure. Yeah. You know.
Me and Mannix were old manning you right there.
Yeah.
You don't remember that code.
I do not.
That was all weapons on Contra. Nintendo, baby.
Okay.
Taking you back.
All right. Always appreciate Chris Maddox for joining us on the show. We'll come back. Jason and John, 90.9 FM, ESPN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.